businesses have a responsibility throughout their entire value chains to respect human rights. If you can apply pressure at the top of the supply chain strategically, then you can achieve change at the bottom.
You are listening to Radio Atticus,
your national program on the law in the name of social justice.
This is obviously a live issue, and we need to start to talk about how we might regulate it here so that we aren't outsourcing our problems.
People are curious. They look at you and they want to know your story.
Radio Atticus, more than the vibe.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Radio Atticus, your national program on the law in the name of social justice. And I'm your host, Anna Marie Reyes. In this edition, what debt collection and legal bullying is all about and your rights as a consumer. But first, you must have heard the introduction of the new laws on metadata. What does it all mean in terms of your own privacy and your rights? Metadata laws are now definitely in place in Australia. It means if you decide to do a quick phone selfie just before stepping out on a Friday night, rest assured that just about every private information about that selfie is accessible to national security bodies for at least 2 years. Criminal law enforcement and intelligence agencies such as ACO and the AFP can quickly authorise themselves access to your selfie in the interests of national security. Associate Professor Yuri Gao in Business Information Systems at the University of Sydney speaks to Radio Atticus's Anthea Hansen, explaining what the metadata laws is all about.
Metadata is basically data about data. So these are descriptive details that describe the data that we communicate across devices or people.
Yep.
So, for instance, if you place a phone call from your mobile phone, the metadata would be things like the time of the call, its duration, where the call was placed from geographically, so it includes geolocation data, and the recipient of the call. So it's a fairly comprehensive description around the content itself.
And how does this affect our civil rights in Australia? So there's been a Medicare leak. How is that going to affect Australians?
Well, I think you're referring to the Medicare data breach that happened.
Yep.
As far as I understand, this is a pretty separate issue because what happened there was basically a hacking activity that someone hacked into the servers of Medicare and essentially stole some data. So that's not in itself metadata. That's the actual data that was stored on the database.
So,
and that was basically offered for sale on the dark web. So that's a different
I guess
thing that
that's,
happened there.
Yeah, I guess that's an issue, though, our information then being sold. I mean, I know you said that's data, but the metadata then being sold, could that be an issue?
I think there's a couple of different issues here. The data retention law that was that came into effect a couple of months ago, basically allows the government or, in fact, 21 different governmental agencies to have access to everyone's metadata. So it essentially compels telecommunication companies and internet service providers to store all their customers' metadata for at least 2 years and allows government essentially free access to this metadata about everyone's communications. So this is by design meant to enable very broad access to everyone's metadata, whereas what happened with Medicare is basically a bug in the system in the sense that whoever entered into the database did it maliciously. So that's quite a different thing.
What is the actual correlation between, so there's this mass hysteria around the government saying, you know, it's to stop terrorism and this is why they're collecting their data. Is this an obscured link, or is it just they're using mass hysteria to gather information?
Well, it seems to me that the data retention law fundamentally reshapes the relationship between the state and its citizens, in the sense that it gives the government powers, really significant powers, to invade everyone's privacy. And I would think that taking such an extreme step like this would need to be backed up by actual data or evidence to justify and rationalize taking such an extreme step. As far as I can tell, having observed that the discourse around this law, I haven't seen a case presented to argue that there has been an increase in terrorist activities in Australia. There's been a lot of rhetoric by different politicians who are making claims to that effect, but I haven't seen any actual evidence or numbers or studies to demonstrate or even indicate that this is actually the case.
So will the monitoring and upkeep of these data retention laws affect our federal budget? So they will have to pay that. Will that be happening?
So and it breaks down in different ways as well. I think a direct expenditure from the government is going to be in the area of $130 million, which would be given in the form of grants to telecommunication companies to actually help them putting down the infrastructure to enable them to actually save everyone's metadata for 2 years. But there are some studies out there by different consulting firms that indicate that the actual expenditures are going to be a lot higher. And one of the effects of that would be, for instance, the telecommunication companies and specifically internet service providers are going to hike up their prices. They're going to roll over the heightened expenditures onto their customers. So in the end of the day, it's going to be us who are going to pay the price for this.
So how can we protect our information and digital activity from being stored for 2 years? So does the likes of encrypting our information and virtual private networks really protect us from oversharing every detail about us?
It's definitely an important step that we can take as individual consumers to protect our individual private information and data. So yeah, this is a fairly simple technological solution that's for the most part extremely cheap as well, that everyone can use to basically to keep the government from having free access into everything that we do online.
Associate Professor Yuri Gal in Business Information Systems at the University of Sydney there, ending that interview with reporter Anthea Hansen. You're listening to Radio Atticus, broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. I'm Anna Marie Reyes.
I'm Michael Kirby, and you are listening to Radio Atticus. Radio Atticus is part of the Community Radio Network. I was formerly a Justice of the High Court of Australia with no time to listen to this, but now I sit glued to Radio Atticus.
You're listening to Radio Atticus, broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER.
Howdy, Magpie here from Dashville up in the Hunter Valley. We're stoked to be hosting our favourite festival, Dashville Skyline, this October long weekend. If you haven't heard about the Cosmic Country Weekender, let me give you the tip. Dashville Skyline's perfect for the whole family. Super laid back, you can camp in the bush and enjoy over 30 awesome live acts from all around the world. There's loads of great Americana-inspired food and booze, markets and fun activities for everyone. It's definitely worth the 2 hours venture north. Check the Dashville website for all the info. Proud sponsors of 2SER.
So what's happening this week?
Have you ever seen laser beams in the sky?
What were you thinking?
I find an opportunity to lick Richard Wilkins.
Okay. Interviews and discussions and all sorts of interesting things. 107.3.
2SER.
The Department of Health at the ACT are reportedly in pursuit of unpaid debts from patients with unpaid bills worth up to millions of dollars. And the debt collection agency is expected to recover money from patients with no Medicare cards or aren't Australian citizens, which includes overseas visitors and those on student visas. For many, the threat of potential debt collectors at your doorstep is quite a daunting experience. But we revisit Radio Atticus' reporter Barry Mackay's interview, which found no one should be bullied legally when collecting debt. Barry speaks to Will Dwyer, solicitor from Redfern Legal Centre, to find out about your rights in debt collection.
Thank you.
Legal bullying may come from a government agency, large companies, or wealthy individuals who have the resources to pay lawyers to assert their power. These lawyers may well know all the tricks of the trade to frighten people unnecessarily and or to get them hooked into a process of litigation that never should have been entered into by the respondent at all. In this report, I'd like to look at some of the issues surrounding one particular type of legal bullying that may more likely be experienced by some listeners, that being responding to heavy-handed tactics by creditors or debt collectors. I spoke with Will Dwyer, the credit and debt solicitor at the Redfern Legal Centre in Sydney, who deals with a lot of clients who find themselves in this situation. I began by asking him how those who find themselves on the receiving end of legal bullying typically feel.
Well, it's a very stressful situation for a lot of people. We encounter clients who are very anxious about their livelihoods. The fear of going to court really is a very strong fear, and it's something that causes people a great deal of concern, particularly when they don't know where, in fact, they stand, what their rights might be, and whether, in fact, their position is a strong one or not.
What forms can legal bullying take in the context of corporate debt collection?
The most common thing we encounter is people who are in financial hardship. They're struggling to pay the bills, to repay loans, or accessing improper forms of credit, which are very costly and which leave them paying a lot more for access to basic things than, in fact, people with more financial resources tend to access. So where people are in financial hardship and they haven't met repayment obligations, whether it's under a loan, whether it's under an electricity bill, a mobile phone bill, or, for example, repaying something like a consumer lease, which is a very costly form of credit. The debt will be chased firstly by the company, and then quite often it's either sold off or collected by a debt collection agency on behalf of the company. The debt collection process really takes the form of contacting a debtor and applying pressure to them to get them to repay a debt. People who owe a debt clearly can't pay the whole lot in one go, and it's even more difficult where they're struggling financially. So quite often a debtor will negotiate with a debt collection agency to repay a debt off over several years or to repay it by installments.
So how does legal bullying take place in this type of situation?
Well, most of the time it really is about the pressure applied by a creditor, whether that creditor is a company, a bank, a debt collection agency or a government agency, or just a general company who is owed a sum of money by a consumer.
Typically, what sorts of threats would you receive in the mail?
Well, the letters take a variety of forms. They're generally called letters of demand, where they set out a debt and set out consequences for non-payment of the debt. And quite often they're phrased in a way which makes it seem as though the debt collector is willing to take their claim to a court to get a court judgment forcing a debtor to repay the creditor through the court process, when in fact it's very unlikely for smaller debts, certainly any debt less than $5,000, that a creditor or a debt collection agency will in fact litigate the debt to seek a court judgment to repay it, because there are significant costs in obtaining a court judgment in terms of resources, legal costs, as well as uncertainty around recovery.
What rights do people have when they find themselves in a situation where they can't repay their debt and they're being threatened in this way?
There's a whole host of rights, really. And at the end of the day, people can't repay money that they don't have. And people need to prioritise their basic living expenses, paying the rent, paying the bills, putting food on the table, before making repayments to any sort of debt collector. So the debt collection agencies recognise this, as do banks and other creditors, that they can only really negotiate with people to repay a fair and appropriate amount of a debt and to do it on fair terms over an appropriate length of time. So there are quite a lot of rights which people who receive letters of demand have, and they range from having the right to maintain a basic living income and to get advice on really the nature of their debt, whether there's scope for negotiating to pay a reduced amount of the debt, to putting a hold on interest fees and charges which accrue along with the debt, or to convince a debt collector that someone is in such financial hardship that they have no capacity to repay a debt and that debt should be written off or waived, which is something which we regularly assist clients to negotiate.
Would it be advisable to tell people if they're in really difficult circumstances to declare bankruptcy?
Bankruptcy is always the last resort, but it's certainly something which either a debtor can do on their own behalf, or it's something where a creditor can also initiate, where someone has a judgment debt for more than $5,000. But again, there's significant cost to a creditor to wind someone up for bankruptcy in terms of the legal costs and the resources to do it. It would probably cost an organisation, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 in legal costs to petition for someone's bankruptcy. And they're unlikely to make that decision to bankrupt someone unless there are assets which they're likely to be able to recover their debt from. So quite often it's property, real estate, or luxury goods, which are provable assets in bankruptcy and which will be sold by a trustee to repay the creditors. But if someone doesn't have an interest in real estate and they don't have any valuable assets, then really there's no point in a creditor bankrupting them because they're unlikely to generate any return.
You're listening to Radio Atticus's Barry Mackay interviewing lawyer Will Dwyer from Redfern Legal Centre on the issue of debt collection and your rights against bullying. And in this section of the interview by reporter Barry Mackay, he also looks at when lawyers themselves start to bully clients and what your rights are.
What sorts of tricks do lawyers typically use to get their way in the power game that is legal bullying?
So, in the context of debt recovery, much of it revolves around what is said in a letter of demand and how it's phrased in terms of a debt collector's intentions to commence legal proceedings to recover a debt. The letters of demand will always say that the creditor or the debt collector may commence legal proceedings to recover a debt. But in terms of weighing up the cost and resources of litigating a debt versus the actual return that someone might get through that process, really it's rarely worth a debt collector's while to seek a judgment on a debt unless it's worth, you know, at least $5,000 or $10,000 and they think that there is some money which the debtor has, which they can access through a court enforcement process. So the court can enforce a judgment debt by issuing garnishee orders on someone's wages or on their bank account, which is a court order ordering an employer or a bank to repay some money directly to the judgment creditor. But there are protections in the law and the civil procedure and protections for Social Security against those types of orders, that Social Security income is protected from these garnishee orders, and the garnishee orders also need to leave a minimum saved amount in a bank account to allow someone to manage their basic living expenses.
So practically speaking, if you're living on Centrelink benefits and you find yourself in this sort of situation, you need not worry that your Centrelink benefits are going to be touched?
Well, it's always a cause of concern. The protection against Centrelink benefits from garnishee orders differs in different states, and there's the least protection in New South Wales in terms of the civil procedure. The protection only lasts as long as that money is characterised as Social Security, and after it's been retained in someone's bank account for more than 4 weeks, it's no longer defined as Social Security income and can be garnished through that process. But it's unlikely that a creditor will pursue someone who is solely reliant on Centrelink income, where they're apprised of that fact and where particularly they have a financial counsellor or community legal centre intervene by having an advocate represent someone to a debt collection agency. The power imbalance shifts significantly, and a lawyer or a financial counsellor as well across the debt collection guidelines, which ASIC and the ACCC publish in terms of limiting the type of contact between debt collectors and the people they're pursuing, and regulating the types of things which can and can't be said in those sorts of letters of demand.
Are there times when letters of demand simply should be ignored, and when should you ignore a letter and when not?
So probably the crucial time period, at least, is a statutory limitation period on recovery of a debt. So in New South Wales, a civil debt can only be recovered for 6 years from the time someone has either accrued the debt, last made a payment on the debt, or acknowledged the debt. So that clock will restart each time you either acknowledge or make a payment on the debt. So if you get a letter of demand from a debt which is approaching 5 or 6 years old, at that point it's crucial not to acknowledge the debt, not to respond to the letter of demand, or in fact do anything, because you don't want the clock to reset and you want to get the protection of the statutory limitation period. It's important to distinguish between a letter of demand and a statement of claim, which is the initiating process in a court, where a statement of claim requires you to file a response, a defence or something, within 28 days. And if you don't respond to a statement of claim, then it's likely the other party will get their judgment by default. A letter of demand is not a statement of claim, and any letter of demand which is designed to look like a court document or which misrepresents a debt collector's intention to start legal proceedings will likely breach the ASIC debt collection guidelines and may also breach the Australian consumer law.
Should people be frightened of debt collectors? Can they come and knock on your door and seize your furniture and goods and try to sell them?
They certainly can't enter your house or seize and sell property. They can approach you at home in certain circumstances, and they can call you with a certain frequency. The ACCC and ASIC debt collection guidelines limit, you know, the time of day or night when debt collectors can call and the frequency with which they can make the calls. It's also important to note that if you dispute liability for a debt, then a debt collector can't continue to pursue you for that debt through that process. That really the key thing to do where a debt collector is calling you regularly is to ask them for proof of the debt and to request that all communication with you is in writing and to explain that you're going to see a financial counsellor or a community legal centre and you're obtaining advice and that they should not contact you over the telephone and they should put to you their evidence of the debt in writing, and when you've had a chance to get legal advice you can respond to them appropriately.
What should listeners do if they find themselves in a legal bullying situation over debt recollection?
Really, the best way to get some relief is to get good advice to know where you stand, and which tempers some of the urgency with which these letters of demand seem to create. So the best way to do that is to get in touch with a financial counsellor or a community legal centre, both of which are always free services. There is a national debt helpline, 1-800-007-007, which is a free service which people can access over the phone, where they can speak to a financial counsellor or a community lawyer to get advice about where they stand over the phone.
What if you're in a remote location and there are no free legal services nearby?
So probably the best way to access it is either online. There's some really good material online, either through the Financial Counsellors Association, individual community legal centres, fair trading organisations, or financial and consumer rights specific legal centres, where there's self-help material online, there's fact sheets and guidance about where you stand in terms of dealing with debt, or through the National Debt Helpline, where you can call that number during business hours and speak directly to a financial counsellor free of charge. That's really the most practical way to get some helpful advice. Don't feel pressured by letters of demand, because often their bark is worse than their bite, and you have a lot of leeway when it comes to negotiating with your creditors. And if you simply can't repay a debt and you're unlikely to be able to in the future, then a debt collector will ultimately recognise that on a commercial basis.
Those help details again. The National Debt Helpline can be contacted on 1-800-007-007. That's 1-800-007-007. The Financial Counsellors Association can be accessed through the internet at www.financialcounsellingaustralia.org.au. That's www.financialcounsellingaustralia.org.au. And there you can find links to local financial counselling services in your state or territory, or you can contact a local community legal centre for further advice on financial hardship issues and the law. My name is Barry Mackay. Thanks for listening.
Interviewing Will Dwyer from Redfern Legal Centre and ending that story on debt collection.
This September, brace yourself for Sydney Fringe as they set loose 300 shows across 50 venues over 30 days. Offering theatre, circus, comedy, dance, music and more wigs than you can poke a stick at. This year's program is live and ready to go, so grab your tickets from sydneyfringe.com before you're locked out of the action. Sydney Fringe Festival sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
2SER 107.3, and this week we're probing the dark recesses of the mind.
Oogum boogum.
Very scary.
Did you wet yourself?
It could happen to you.
Stick around, even if that scene does disturb you too much.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
2SER, live and streaming at 2SER.com.
You're listening to Radio Atticus, and I'm Anna Marie Reyes. Radio Atticus is broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network. You're listening to Radio Atticus, broadcast nationally to the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. I'm Anne-Marie Reyes.
Well, I'm Gillian Triggs. And for legal news, facts and opinion, listen to Radio Atticus.
Shout out to all our listeners around the country. To MIA Griffith, New South Wales, 2RRR Gladesville, New South Wales, 2Wet Tank FM West Campsie, New South Wales, 2XXFM Canberra City, 3CR Fitzroy, Victoria, 3UJFM Alexandra, Victoria, 4NSA Queensland in Noosa Heads, 7RPH Hobart, Tasmania, 8CCC Alice Springs, 8EarGov FM in Nullanbee, ACT, 3CH in Wooden, Victoria. And that's about all we have time for in this edition. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you want more, why not go to www.2ser.com.au, go to the program guide and find Radio Atticus for our podcasts of the last 3 or 4 programs. I hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in again next week for more Law in the Name of Social Justice. I'm Anne-Marie Reyes saying bye for now.